This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Lisa Mullins. Coming up, a shooting at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. A doctor is injured. The suspect is dead. We'll have the latest.
Also today, a new WBUR poll finds most Boston residents support the city's Olympic bid, but an overwhelming majority want a vote on the issue.
We ought to have votes on things that are big and important and massive expenditures of money.
And keeping your own name or taking your spouse's.
A new study reveals how culture, identity, and professional aspirations inform the decision.
How did you decide, or how will you?
Plus, Red Hot Patriot, a new play about the life of commentator and journalist Molly Ivins.
It's just that no editor ever looked at me and said, oh, you poor, sweet, fragile little thing. It was always, Ivins, there's a four-alarm fire at the grain silo. Get your ass in there and interview the flames!
All that coming up this hour on Radio Boston.
First, this news.
This podcast is a free service of WBUR. Please help us keep it free. Go to WBUR.org and click donate in the upper right-hand corner. And now back to the show.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Lisa Mullins. A doctor at Brigham and Women's Hospital is in critical condition this afternoon after being shot twice inside the hospital early this morning. The suspected shooter has died of what police describe as a clearly self-inflicted gunshot wound.
Police have not publicly identified the suspected shooter or the victim or the possible motive, but they say the shooting does not appear to be random and there is no threat to others right now, according to police.
For more information, we are joined by WBUR's Fred Bever, who is at Brigham and Women's Hospital. Fred, could you walk us through, please, what we know and don't know at this point?
Lisa, a little after 11 a.m., calls started coming in to police about a shooting on the second floor here at the Shapiro Cardiovascular Center at Brigham and Women's Hospital. Here's Boston Police Commissioner Bill Evans on it.
We know he came into the hospital on the second floor asking for this particular doctor. Why, and for whatever reason, that's something we're looking into, but it wasn't clearly a case of a suspect coming in here, just acting out. There was a particular reason why he targeted this doctor.
Now, Evans says that the doctor came out to see the man, responded to the request, and the man then shot the doctor twice. And this occurred somewhere between the waiting room and an exam room, according to Evans. The shooter was described as 6 feet tall, wearing a blue sweater and holding beige keys in his hands, which is how Evans says they identified the man that they found in an exam room with a self-inflicted gunshot wound and a gun beside his body.
So they retrieved the gun at this point?
They do have the gun. They haven't identified what kind of gun it is.
Okay. Do we know how the doctor is doing at this point?
That he is in a life-threatening condition, and beyond that, the hospital is not releasing any more information until the family says it's okay to. We're still waiting for authorities, either the police or the Suffolk County DA's office, to release more information about both the shooter and the victim.
And Fred, any more information about how the suspected shooter and the doctor might have been connected, whether or not they had any previous connection?
It's not clear. Commissioner Evans says police are looking into whether they knew each other. He did say that the police believe the shooter was not one of the doctor's patients, as investigators are still on the scene talking to eyewitnesses at this point.
Okay. Thank you very much. WBUR's Fred Bever speaking to us from Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. Thank you.
Thank you.
There was a press conference earlier today at the hospital. One of the people who spoke was the executive vice president and chief operating officer at Brigham and Women's, Ron Walls. He talked about how prepared the hospital was for such a scenario.
Our belief is that there is no amount of preparation that anyone can do that completely eliminates the prospect of any of this kind of tragic event happening. But we do believe we have a responsibility, and we're working hard to meet that responsibility to have all of our people completely prepared in the best way we can so that when something like this happens, if it happens, and whatever it is, our staff is able to respond.
For more on the questions that today's incident raises about hospital security, we turn now to Meg Femino. She's the director of emergency management at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. She instituted Beth Israel's Code Silver policy. It's set in motion when lethal weapons are on the loose in a hospital or when there's an incident of violence that may warrant some kind of a lockdown. Meg Femino, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on the program. What are the details in this incident that jump out to someone like you in your position, which concerns itself exactly with this kind of incident?
Well, this is really what we would consider a predictable surprise, unfortunately. We know that in hospital shootings, they tend to be targeted. It's not what you see in schools, which is just a person that is going in looking to harm as many people as they can and are roaming about. Johns Hopkins did a great paper back in 2012 where they really studied the 154 events of hospital shootings from the years 2000 to 2011. So we realize that most of them are very targeted. It could be a grudge. It could be an employee going back. It could be a mercy killing with a patient. So this is, unfortunately, something that we've seen. It's on the rise in the nation, and it was just a matter of time before it came, you know, into our backyard also.
You said that Johns Hopkins report indicated 154 deaths in hospitals from...
No, 154 hospital shootings.
Shootings themselves.
Correct.
So regardless of the number of people who were victims at the time, from 2000 to 2011, why is it on the rise?
You know, that's really hard to say. You know, hospitals are typically very open environments. I think gun violence is on the rise across the nation, you know, in all sectors, across all sectors. So it's not surprising that is also in the hospitals.
We heard in the press conference earlier today, as I'm sure you did, that Brigham and Women's does not have metal detectors. Does Beth Israel right now have them?
No, we don't.
And has the hospital considered them?
I think a lot of hospitals over the years have considered them, but they've been proven to be not that effective. I think the prevention of this in an open society is very hard because we don't have impenetrable security in an open society, and it makes it a particular challenge because people do have to have access to health care.
So how well does something like this Code Silver policy, how well has it been working? And I'm not sure if that was in use in Brigham and Women's now today when we heard about the response there. Do you know?
So from what I understand from the press conference is they did activate their protocols for, you know, some people call it a Code Silver. We call it a weapons-related threat. And it's really a series of protocols depending on what information people are given. So sometimes if you're in an administrative area and you know the location isn't near you, your strategy for self-protection would be to evacuate. If you're in a patient care area, we know healthcare workers sometimes will not leave their patients. So the strategy at that point, or if it's very nearby you and you don't want to go running out into harm's way, we teach people how to shelter, what we call shelter in place. And it sounds like they did that at Brigham and Women's today.
And shelter in place means just stay where you are, regardless of where, for instance, a gunman might be?
Well, what it means is to put yourself in the safest place possible, depending on your proximity to where you think or you know the gunman would be. So it might be to go into a locked room, you know, bathrooms locked. We tell people to shut off the lights, shut off your pagers, your cell phones. Don't open the door for anybody until you know that law enforcement has arrived and they've neutralized the threat.
Very briefly, the best protection from something like this sounds like it's prevention. What do you say?
It would be great if we could prevent it, but I don't think we're going to get... I don't think it's going to ever be a zero risk if that's achievable in a healthcare environment in an open society. But I think to teach people how to respond to these, and certainly I think moving forward and as this happens, we always look at lessons learned, kind of what went well, what didn't go well, and where we can improve the response. But it sounds like it was very fast. I know from Beth Israel's perspective, almost as soon as we heard about it, we realized that the suspect was apprehended and there was no threat. So I think that is a huge piece of what has to go well is the information sharing.
Okay. Thank you, Meg Femineau, Director of Emergency Management at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. Thank you, Meg.
You're welcome.